جامعه لاریجانی، از اینکه برنامه فیس تو فیس شرکت کردین خیلی
Thank you so much, Mr. Lahijani, for joining us on this edition of Face to Face on Press TV. Let's go straight to Iran's nuclear issue. On November 24, 2013, Iran and the P5+1 group of countries signed an agreement known as the Joint Action Plan, which offered a roadmap for the future nuclear talks. Now, as Iran's parliament speaker and a former top nuclear negotiator, what was your initial impression after the deal was inked?
در واقع رئیس پارلمان ایران هستید و تاپ نوکلیر نگوشیتر ایران بودیم قبلا. وقتی که شنیدین که ایران با 5+1 به این توافق رسیده، این اولین احساس شما چی بود؟
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Well, I felt positive about it because Iran had for long been seeking to resolve the matters through negotiations. So when I heard through the media the news that the talks had succeeded and that an interim 6-month deal had been reached, I was happy, though I still knew little about the details. I had a good feeling about it.
Why hadn't we reached a deal already before this round of talks? As you know, for years Iran was engaged in negotiations. How come this didn't happen like 2 years ago?
We didn't reach an agreement in the past due to several reasons. Part of the blame could be placed on the approach taken by Western countries and world powers. They refused to admit that the differences could be resolved through dialogue. They would resort to pressure through psychological propaganda and military threats, and at times they imposed sanctions. In fact, according to their approach, those measures would force Iran to back down and would block Iran's progress and prevent it from taking further steps toward a stable position in the nuclear field. Therefore, they would at times come to the negotiating table but would leave it later. The other factor was regional developments, some of which would make the other side take a stubborn approach and make new excuses. I strongly believe that their problem is not the nuclear issue. Rather, they are seeking other goals in the region.
I
mean, all regional developments have been effective upon their approach toward the nuclear negotiations. For instance, amid the 33-day war between Lebanon's Hezbollah movement and Israel, Kissinger wrote an article in which he called for renewed pressure on Iran. Then, in a matter of 48 hours, they wrote the draft of a new resolution against Tehran. This, as the 33-day war was a matter of defense, the defense of the Lebanese people and Hezbollah against Israeli aggression. I mean, the nuclear issue was just an excuse for them to pursue another goal. Then EU Foreign Policy Chief Mr. Solana called me and apologized, because in 1 week we were scheduled to meet for fresh negotiations. He said the saboteurs did their job and torpedoed the talks. This was one example of outside factors which would block an agreement. Still, we could also be blamed because in some occasions we did not follow up the talks very closely. Our officials sometimes claim that we don't have to negotiate the nuclear issue at all.
Do you believe it was a mistake that the nuclear issue was brought up as just one of the many issues in the negotiations?
If it was one of the issues discussed, that would have been okay. But the approach based on which they said the nuclear issue shouldn't be raised at all was a mistake. However, this was of little impact upon the failure in the talks. The bulk of the problem was rooted in the pressures they exerted upon Iran for non-related purposes they pursued. They were also seeking to force Iran to leave the talks. They did not want a resolution through an equal deal. But in the latest round, they realized that the status of Iran's nuclear issue was not deniable. I mean, the nuclear chain had succeeded, like in enrichment. We had already succeeded in the past, But back then the volume was small, while at the time of the deal it was considerable. In addition, in the past they were not expecting us to be able to develop the technology for the fuel rods. They even told me in person that Iran is not capable of doing it. But we proved we were. In fact, our entire nuclear chain had reached success. Now it's a reality which they are facing.
Let me interrupt you here. Many in the West claim that the pressure on Iran is even further mounting, and that it was the pressure which forced Iran to come to the negotiating table. What's your take on that?
Well, I have heard that too. They keep repeating it. That's a claim U.S. officials resort to in order to appease public opinion at home or justify their wrong behavior in the past. They also do this to satisfy the Zionist lobbies in their country. U.S. officials fabricate those claims to appease them. They are doing this for propaganda purposes, the details of which we don't want to go into now.
Do you mean those claims are just meant for domestic consumption?
Yes, a major goal they're seeking is that one. Meanwhile, with those claims, they want to maintain their political status and prestige, as they refuse to admit to things which they used to deny in the past. Now in the Geneva deal, at least they recognize Iran's right to enrichment, something which they refused to do in the past. Therefore, they have to offer explanations for that recognition. They have to raise something which could undermine and overshadow the recognition. That's one part. Another issue is that they might be miscalculating. If that's the case, it could harm them in the future. We can't do anything for that. All we can do is advise them to beware not to fall into the trap of their own illusions. One miscalculation occurred a few years ago at the time when the three European foreign ministers traveled to Tehran and signed a deal based on which they asked Iran to suspend enrichment in exchange for the West recognizing Tehran's right to peaceful nuclear energy. The miscalculation took place at a time when Iraq had just been invaded and occupied. At that time, one of European leaders traveled to Basra and met with his country's deployed troops there, telling them that the fruit of the Iraq invasion had been picked in Tehran. By that, he meant the Tehran Agreement, which Iran had signed with goodwill. But that was a big miscalculation, and they realized it later. Iran was not afraid of them. It had taken an honest approach, but it later withdrew because the other side was not sincere. Now they have to understand that this should not happen again. I mean, if they think that Iran signed the deal because of the pressure of the sanctions, they need to be worried, because they will soon see the consequences of this miscalculation. But if they follow a realistic approach, they will realize that Iran has reached a certain status in peaceful nuclear technology. Iran has never said it will refrain from talks. Therefore, if they want a solution, dialogue can lead them to success.
I had an interview with Iran's nuclear chief, Dr. Salehi, in which I asked him that in case a joint action plan, signed in Geneva in November 2013, is violated by the other side, the United States in particular, how long would it take Iran to stand again at its pre-deal nuclear status? He said it was a matter of just a few hours. Now I'm asking you the same question. Which measures could the Iranian parliament take if Washington and its allies act in breach of the joint action plan?
First of all, I think we don't have to look at the issue so negatively at the time being. We better look at it from a positive perspective. I mean, we are now moving forward in a step-by-step path. The talks are now conducted for a final settlement of the issue. So in a matter of few months, we will see if the other side is acting based on honesty or not. There is no reason to be negative now. The other point is that we have already contemplated this and weighed our options, and I would say they will regret it if they do violate the deal. I mean, we will not be losing anything. At the same time, we don't have to clearly state what our response will be, but we have come up with a set of responses. I believe what we should do now is make efforts to reach the stated goals which the Iranian nation has been seeking.
Many in the West contend that Iran has to come to the conclusion that it has to hold direct talks with the United States for a final solution to the nuclear dispute. What's your argument with regard to that?
That claim could be true if Iran had requested dialogue with the U.S., but that's not the case. In fact, it is Washington which has been trying to hold talks with Tehran in the past couple of years, and there are documents proving this. It's nothing secret. It happened even before the new Iranian administration took office. They repeatedly requested direct talks with Iran, but there was no call for talks from our side.
What is Iran's response now?
I'm going to explain this. I mean, that claim could be true once Iran was the side which requested talks. But as I said, the case was the other way around. They have been overreaching to Iran through different channels in the past 2 years. And of course, Iran received and heard their messages. I would say the claim you talked about in the question shows their wrong impression. They have to admit that Iran has a set of principles based on which it moves forward. The Islamic Republic has a clear agenda and a strategy for its activities, whether they are about the nuclear program or regional and international issues. Those principles are based on the notion of independence, and we actually have no reason to act otherwise. When they seek direct talks in secret and then claim something else in public, that's their problem, which they should tackle themselves. It has nothing to do with us. Our strategies are quite clear.
Do you think once the nuclear issue is fully settled, the pressure on the country will be eased? Or the West will find other excuses raising new issues like human rights or a fabricated terrorism file, so that the pressure will continue to exist through other channels?
It's not serving them if they resort to irrelevant issues. Developments in the Middle East and the entire region we are living in are so fast-paced, which the U.S. and major powers are unable to predict. Just take a glance at what happened in Tunisia, Egypt, and other countries in the region. Which one of those changes was predictable to the U.S. authorities? I mean, the events were so unpredictable that within 3 weeks after the Egyptian revolution, they took three different stances regarding what happened there. And you can still see how they are responding to the latest developments these days. One problem we have with the Western countries is their support for dictators in the region. This is in clear contradiction with their claims. If you take a look at the countries in the region, you will realize that all the deposed dictators and the incumbent ones are being backed by the West and the U.S. Who did support Hosni Mubarak and Bin Ali? This policy would never bring them a positive image. They have to admit that things have changed in the region, and the change has nothing to do with some small groups, as they claim. It is, as a matter of fact, some